fantastic. This evening, Helen is going to bring our reading to us. And it's from Exodus chapter 3 and 4.
Indeed.
Brilliant. Right.
Thank you. I don't know why people think I'm an alpha female at all. The reading is from Exodus. It's chapter 3, verses 1 to 10, and chapter 4, verses 10 to 17. Okay. So, chapter 3, Moses and the burning bush. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within the bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight. Why does not the bush burn up? When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God said to him from beneath the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face, because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelite has reached me, and I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. And then we go to chapter 4, verse 10. Moses said to the Lord, Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak, and I will teach you what to say. But Moses said, Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, What about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth, and as if you were God to him. But take the staff in your hand so you can perform the signs with it. It's the word of the Lord. Thank you. Good evening. My name's Helen. I'm a member here at Scent. Thank you very much for asking me to speak this evening. Before I start on that passage, I would just like to share something. That hymn is one of my favourites. And I didn't ask for it, but I was very, very glad to see it on the sheet and to hear it. And the reason it's one of my favourites is that my mum had a friend who was a missionary, and she was out in Rhodesia, and she had a little boy who unfortunately got a thorn in his toe, and when they gave him an anaesthetic to get the thorn out, because it was quite deep, unfortunately he reacted to it, and he passed away. And my mum couldn't go to the funeral, but she was so conscious that her friend, her best friend, needed her more than ever and needed a friend. So she wrote her a letter based entirely around that hymn, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And isn't that really what prayer is all about? What a friend we have in Jesus, and what a fitting way to start a talk about that's part of our prayer series. So we'll move to the passage. I'll talk a bit about the Israelites and their cry out to God. And I'll talk about how God communicates with Moses, continuing the theme that prayer is communication with God, not simply us talking to him. And I'll talk a bit about Moses' response. So the Israelites. Have you ever had a job that you really hated? Maybe a paper round that you did at 5 a.m. when it was freezing. Maybe you've got one now that you're not too keen on, I don't know. When I was a student in between my first and second year, as most students do, I wanted to earn a bit of money in the summer. And I just came up against a brick wall. I couldn't find anything. No one in Huddersfield wanted to employ me, sadly. But I did go to a temping agency in the end. Now, I can't type, still can't, so I wasn't any good temping in an office, but they said I could go temping in a packing factory. But even they didn't want me for the majority of the summer, but about 2 weeks before the holidays were over, I got a call. And at first it was kind of all right, because there were a few girls there from my sixth form who I knew, and it was quite nice to catch up with them at breaks and things. But then the day that really finished me off was the day that we had to put parking fines inside a plastic wallet, turn over the top and put staples on so it wouldn't fall out. And just the idea of being instrumental in anyone getting a parking fine, I couldn't live for it, so I quit the job. Fortunately, I got a job as a tutor, which suited me very much better. Now, tedious though that job was, it probably wasn't as bad as the lot that the Israelites had, was it? And probably most of us haven't really been in that same position, because their work was awful, wasn't it? It was backbreaking, and it was unbelievably tedious, making bricks out of straw. I mean, it must have been mind-numbing. They were out in the blazing sun, didn't really get paid, they were slaves, don't know how much they got to eat, and it was utterly miserable. They weren't appreciated. So much so that if their slave drivers decided they didn't really like them, or for whatever whim they weren't working hard enough, they'd be beaten. So much as I didn't like my packing job, I think I would have fared much less well had I swapped places with one of these Israelites. But of course, they didn't have the same choice as me. They couldn't say, oh, well, I don't fancy this. I'll look for something else. They had no choice. They had to do it. They were slaves. So we hear, don't we, from God that they cried out to him. And you wonder what form that took, don't you? Because although I don't know for certain, I think it'd be very unlikely they'd be able to meet on a Sabbath and have a prayer meeting or any kind of service. And similarly, I don't know if when they got home from work, they would be able to meet in one another's houses, because I would imagine at that point they'd be so exhausted and so desperate to eat something and go to bed that they probably didn't have much time as a religious community. So what I've assumed the form that those cries took was when they were working, actually when they were in the thick of their suffering, they cried out to God. I don't imagine they vocalized it, because I would have thought if one of the slave drivers heard it, they probably wouldn't be too chuffed. But it came from their hearts. Whether they groaned, whether they sent up a silent prayer, I don't know. But it came from their hearts. And we're told that God hears them. He says to Moses, doesn't he? I have heard their prayers and I have seen their suffering and I'm concerned for them. And I'm going to do this thing for them. I'm going to bring them out of that land of Egypt where they're in slavery. And I'm going to take them out of that and I'm going to bring them into the land that I've got promised for them. Now, it must have seemed to the Israelites at the time that God didn't have good plans for them. But here, God, who sees the bigger picture, says to Moses, I do have bigger plans for them. I've got better plans for them. And I want you to be involved. So God answers the Israelites' prayer. Maybe not in the way they expect, but he answers. And again, what we don't really know is how long they've been crying out to him for. I imagine it's probably years and years and years. We know that they were in an awful situation when Moses was born. And we know that at this point he's grown up, he's in Midian, he's got a family of his own. So why is it that God suddenly acts now? Why not sort it out beforehand? Surely they've been praying to him before. I don't have an answer. But I do know that everyone here will have things that they're praying into. Things that weigh on them. Things that are really important to them. People that are dear to them. Mine is one of my close family members who is not a Christian. And how I've prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed that he would find God. Still thinks it's a load of rubbish. But just as the Israelites didn't stop praying, I'm not going to stop praying, and I hope that you won't stop praying. Because we can't know the mind of God. We can't know his plans. All we can do is trust and keep going in prayer. So let's look at how Moses speaks to God. Sorry, how God speaks to Moses, and then how Moses speaks to God. So how does God speak to Moses? Well, at first he doesn't speak. He appears. There's this bush that's on fire, but it's not on fire because it's not burning. And Moses thinks, I'm going to go over and I'm going to have a look at this. I have to say, when I read that with a view to preaching on it, I thought, really? I'd have been licking it in the other direction, thinking, what weird thing is this? But Moses clearly has a bit of something about him, because he goes over, doesn't he? And he thinks, what is this? There's something special here. There's something beyond what I can just see here. And he goes over to the bush. And then he hears God's voice very clearly, doesn't he? He hears him say, Moses, Moses, take off your sandals. This is holy ground. And this is how Moses is commissioned, isn't it? He has this very, very close encounter with God before he's commissioned to do that huge task that God set before him. Why does God choose Moses? He seems like a bit of an unlikely character to me. Firstly, he wasn't even really raised as a Hebrew, he was raised as an Egyptian. Secondly, he's killed someone. Intentionally or unintentionally, we don't know. Thirdly, he's an exile. Hasn't even circumcised his sons. So why pick Moses? I think there's two answers to that. And I think one of them is that God chooses unlikely people. And he does use the weak to shame the strong. Because we know that in those people that seem very unlikely, people like Saul, who became Paul, in using them, God shows that it's not through our own power, through our own eloquence, through our own skill that he's working, but it's his power and it's his glory that's doing it. And also, I think that there is something very clear to God about Moses, and it's clear to us, that Moses loved his people. And we see that in the early passages in Exodus, when he's very young and passionate and doesn't really know how to temper this, does he? So he goes to this Egyptian, and I imagine they get into a fight, and Moses ultimately kills him because he's defending his people. And then he perhaps overzealously goes and intervenes in a fight between the two Hebrews. And then he's told, well, what are you going to do about it? You're going to kill me like you killed that Egyptian? And he's forced to leave. But I don't believe at that point Moses ever stopped loving his people. And I don't believe that that passion really ever went, but that he never really knew how to use it. But I think God saw it, and that's why he used him. So what can we learn today about how God speaks to Moses? Probably not many of us have seen many bushes burning around Headingley without actually being on fire. But I don't believe that God has stopped speaking to us. I believe that he speaks to us today every bit as much as he spoke to our biblical heroes who we've been looking at. I don't know how he speaks to you. I don't know if it's conscience or if it's through what he directs you to in the Bible or if you hear his voice directly. Maybe all three at different times, I don't know. But what I do know is that when God does speak to you, you might not actually like it. Because he might ask you to do something like he asked Moses to do. Not many of us will be splitting the sea, I understand that. But he might ask you to do something you really don't fancy, that's really, really hard. A few months ago, I felt that I'd heard God's voice very, very clearly. In a previous church up in Scotland, I had had a disagreement with one of my Christian friends there. And we'd kind of been reconciled, but things were still extremely awkward. And I heard God say to me, I want you to write to your friend and to be fully reconciled and to make it right with them. I thought, really? I mean, I've moved away. Does it really matter? But of course, I had to do it. So I did. I wrote to my friend and I said, I have to be honest and say I can't go back on what I said because I believed it. But what I do regret is how I did it and how I didn't really think about how it might have hurt you. And I'm really sorry for any pain that I've caused. So I sent it off and I got a really lovely email back saying, Dear Helen, thank you so much for sending your very gracious letter. It's very, very good, kind of you. I appreciate that at the time we all think we're doing the right thing and then sometimes a bit later we might think otherwise. You brought me healing in your letter and you're always welcome in my home. And you know, the funny thing was, I thought by asking me to write this letter, God was trying to bless my friend. What I didn't realise was how much it would bless me. I think that's key in understanding why God uses us to do things. God doesn't need Moses. He's the creator of the universe, he can do what he wants. Doesn't need Moses. But he uses him to bless Moses and to bless his people. So when we're crying out to God, asking him to speak to us, it carries a warning. He might ask you to do something that's really hard to do. So how does Moses respond? Well, probably how any of us would respond. On the surface of this, you think, seriously, Moses, he appeared to you in a burning bush, he commissioned you. Don't you know this is going to win you your place in history? But actually, it must have been absolutely terrifying, mustn't it? Can you imagine? There is no wonder that Moses says to him, No, I'm sorry, you've got the wrong man. I can barely string a sentence together. Never mind, go and have a word with Pharaoh. Pick someone else. It's not me. You can sort of see why God gets a bit wound up here, can't you? Why he says, well, didn't I create speech, mouths, voices, tongues? Isn't that all down to me anyway? Don't you think if I tell you, you can go and do this, you can go and do it? You can see why he gets a bit annoyed, a bit frustrated. But he's God, he's not us. And what he does is he meets Moses where he is and he makes a way for him. He doesn't get so frustrated that he says to him, well, fine, Moses, if you don't want to do it, plenty of people who will. He says, okay, you say you can't speak? I'll find someone who can speak for you. That guy Aaron, he's a good one. And is it interesting that he says he's already coming to meet you? Because God knew. God knew already what Moses would say. But he doesn't let Moses off completely, does he? He says, I'm going to help you do this. Do this thing that I've commissioned you to do. But you still have to do it. It's not down to Aaron. He can be your mouthpiece. But you still have to go. You still have to meet Pharaoh. You still have to use your staff to bring about these miracles and these things that I'm going to show Pharaoh before he lets my people go. So we almost have this model of a prayer in which Moses is negotiating with God. Now, I'm not completely sure I should be encouraging that. I think probably we should all just say yes to God. But equally, I can understand Moses' point of view. And I would hope that when everything within us says, I can't do this, Lord, find someone else, send someone else, it can't be me, I cannot do this, that he would always be able to find a way for us, that he would always be able to help us, to guide us, to show us how we can do what he's asking us to do. So, we've talked about the Israelites, how they sent up their prayers to heaven and how God heard them, but how God appeared to Moses in such a powerful way and spoke to him. And we've looked at how Moses responded. And however frightening and scary and too big a task this seemed for Moses, still, God made a way. As I hope he will for all of us. In Jesus' name, amen.